Eleanor Roosevelt once said that you would not worry so much about what others think of you if you realized how seldom they do. And she was probably very aware of the spotlight effect, and that is the tendency to think everything is about you. If we spill some sauce on our trousers, we think everyone will notice. The first day that we go to the gym, we feel like everyone is judging us. I personally have ADHD, and it takes me an immense amount of willpower to not jump around or at least do some stretching when I do an activity where people are normally still, like video calls, barbecues, watching a movie. I did make peace with that, but I was standing with a friend who was hosting a barbecue, and they warned me that maybe I should, you know, not do it because perhaps people would judge me or something. And clearly, they were actually worried about themselves being judged for having a particularly weird friend that wouldn't stop stretching. But what's really funny here is that 90% of the comments I receive in relation to my exercising and stretching problems are actually people talking about themselves. They'll see me having a stretch and they'll say, "Oh, I should stretch more." Or they'll see me exercising and they'll say, I should really exercise more." They're not judging me, and they certainly don't judge my friend for being friends with me. They judge themselves. And that's how pervasive the spotlight effect is, because we don't care about other people, we care about ourselves. So, hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Webster Harris. Obviously, you don't care who I am, but I'm adding it in anyway. The important thing here is I am working to make this an interesting and educative experience for you to make you a wiser and less egotistical person. Today, we are talking about cognitive biases or mind traps and the specific episode today on the theme of ego. We have 9 different biases to get through with the goal of helping you become a more rational and balanced human, as well as being able to spot the reasons behind other people's bad decisions and behaviors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, let's crack into it. Number 2 is the Dunning-Kruger effect, and that's where we get a little bit delusional about our skills. Let's say an amateur writer thinks that their first draft is as good as a prize-winning author's final manuscripts, even though that author had several re-edits. Or maybe you practiced Duolingo for a few weeks and you think you're going to be able to speak Spanish when you arrive in Mexico for your holiday, but then you realize in reality you can't speak a word. This effect is the reason why there are over 5 million podcasts, yet about 50,000 of them actually have listeners, because people start a random show interviewing some unknown guest over coffee, and they expect that someone will actually listen, even though you could be listening to a podcast like Smartlist, which is hosted by 3 very well-known actors, in an episode where they interview 3 presidents of America. Like, talk about the amount of fame you can put into one episode. Why would someone listen to a nobody interviewing someone else that's a nobody? But the spotlight effect and the Dunning-Kruger effect add up to make you think, yes, it's brilliant, everyone's going to listen. But surprisingly, they don't. The original study by Dunning and Kruger in 1999 found that individuals who scored in the lowest quartile on tests of grammar, humor, or logic significantly overestimated their abilities and thought they were good at all of them. However, the good thing is they did find that you can make a difference by providing feedback on someone's performance. It can really help them recognize their own incompetence. Now, don't run around telling people they're terrible at everything straight away. But at least for yourself, seek and recognize feedback as a valuable tool to improve. And perhaps don't tell your friend who runs a podcast that it's useless, because after 5 episodes of no one listening, they might realize they're not going to get any listeners all by themselves, and they're going to have that feedback without you being mean to them. Regardless, for yourself, whatever you do, it pays to be a little bit more humble in our expectations and just ask for feedback so we can improve. Charles Bukowski said that the problem with the world is that the intelligent people are full of doubts, whilst the stupid ones are full of confidence. So do what you can to balance that out a bit. Next, we have the status quo bias. If you've worked in an office, I'm sure you'll know it can be hard to make changes if people are used to the status quo. My sister worked for a design agency and they use some old software because it's what they've always used. There's great software you can use on your iPad all the time, but it has not been adopted. And the status quo bias is why people stick with the same brand of coffee or the same fabric softener. It's what we're used to. It's not just habits, it's also the perceived difficulty and risks of change. Even if changing has a clear objective upside, such as a better workout routine or a new piece of software with several better features, it still inherently will have some risks of trying to do something different because we don't know if we're going to have problems. And this is one of the things that's really difficult for entrepreneurs to realize, because they aren't going to succeed with just a slightly better product. People don't care. They don't need a new app or a new anything else unless it is radically better. People would much prefer to sit and complain about their current problem than risk having more problems for something that maybe has a few small improvements. Daniel Kahneman proved that people will even pay to avoid a future penalty rather than to receive for free a future reward. And for ourselves, we should really try and fight this, because growth mindset is all about adaptability and change. And that's how we can stay up to date and focus on working on the difficult and risky things that others are too afraid to try. The status quo is fixed mindset, anti-growth mindset thinking. Charles Darwin put it best when he said, "It is not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the ones most responsive to change." So don't forget that. In the next bias, we have the curse of knowledge. Now, it sounds stupid to think that knowledge could be a bad thing to have, but in this bias, we'll find that once we learn and understand something, we forget what it's like to not know it. That's why things like being a good teacher or a communicator is actually hard and less obvious than you think. Steven Pinker said that the curse of knowledge is the single best explanation that we have for why good people write bad prose. Let's say a concept makes sense to you. It's really hard to try and think of that concept as something that doesn't make sense. Like an optical illusion, once you've seen it, it's very hard to unsee it. It makes sense. But try and draw that optical illusion straight away for someone else, it's not so easy to recreate. This phenomenon was first proven by one of my favorite experiments from 1999 called the Tapper Listener Experiment, where one person was given a really, really famous song to tap, and they would always tap it and they'd be like, "Wow, everyone's going to work out what I just tapped," because they could hear the notes that fit with the noises that they were tapping perfectly. The song fit. But if you just hear some random taps without any of the musical notes along to it, it could be from any possible song in the world, and it's actually really hard to guess what it is. The point is, if we have the knowledge, it's really hard to unsee that lack of knowledge that makes sense of the rest of it. And this is, of course, why we assume that people understand the reasons for our actions in an argument, and we think that when they react to us wrongly, it's because they don't care about us. But in reality, they just don't understand what it is that we're thinking about, and we just haven't explained what they need to hear to be able to empathize with us. It's not that they are unempathetic. Now, moving into cognitive dissonance, another favorite. If you've read Aesop's Fables, there is a tale about a fox who sees some very juicy looking grapes, and he loves grapes. So he tries to jump for the grapes in the vine above him, but he doesn't reach them. So he takes a bit of a run up and a big jump, and he snatches for the grapes above him, and he completely misses them and lands in a big heap. He brushes himself off and looks at the grapes, kind of annoyed for a second, and then he lifts his head and says, "They are probably sour grapes, waste of time trying to get them," and he walks off. Now, this is cognitive dissonance. When he first saw the grapes and wanted them, there were three possibilities of what could have happened. Firstly, he could have reached the grapes and had a success. Secondly, he could have failed to reach them and been a failure. Or thirdly, he could pretend he didn't actually want to reach them after all, thereby avoiding having to admit that he was a failure. And we do this weird mental gymnastics all the time as humans. We'll say we care about the environment, but we'll still take a plane somewhere. A smoker will rationalize their habit by downplaying the health risks or saying that they'll quit sometime, but just actually not right now or next week or next month or any time actually in the future. Employees will continue to invest in a failing project to avoid admitting that it was a bad idea to start it in the first place. And we are stuck with this way that we like to think of ourselves, which is believing that we are a rational, sensible person who makes good decisions. Even if there is evidence against it, we'll try and fabricate new evidence to support our bad belief instead of being willing to switch beliefs. This is a really underlying trait in basically all addictions. There is some form of cognitive dissonance going on. You know, we'll cover up the obvious downsides with a nice sounding explanation like drinking alcohol every day is a form of self-care. I need to relax. I need to look after myself. You know, it's good, even though it's clearly causing you lots of other life problems. But, you know, those life problems just show why you need to look after yourself even more. Cognitive dissonance. Now we have the halo effect. Humans give more weight to the first information that we receive. If I tell you that Jessica is intelligent, industrious, impulsive, critical, stubborn, and even envious, well, she comes across okay. Sure, she does have some bad traits, but probably her envy and stubbornness is part of her intelligence and her business mind. If I tell you that Dave is envious, stubborn, critical, impulsive, industrious, and intelligent, well, he sounds like a bit of an a-hole. Yes, he does have intelligence, but we know that he's really envious and critical, so his intelligence is maybe just part of his devious nature. Well, of course, in reality, both Jessica and Dave have the exact same six traits, just read out in the opposite orders. It's just the ones that we heard first were used to interpret the later ones. And that's the halo effect. A single or initial aspect of someone or a thing outshines the rest of the picture. It's a protective halo around them. Bernie Madoff was the top dog of Wall Street, a legendary investor. His returns didn't seem to always make sense, but he was backed by sensible people. He had a reputation, so people further invested in what became the biggest Ponzi scheme in history. In fact, you see the halo effect everywhere. A candidate went to Harvard. Even if their CV wasn't crazy promising and didn't stand out otherwise, they're more likely to just get the benefit of the doubt and have an interview anyway. The halo effect is actually why attractive people have an easier life. In 1972, it was proven that participants would rate attractive individuals as more socially competent, intelligent, and more moral, despite there being no evidence about their character traits besides just a photo. And this is the same reason why cute cats will get away with breaking all your stuff and they'll remain well-fed and well-loved, whilst a gross, scary-looking spider that actually keeps flies and mosquitoes out of your house and genuinely provides a health service to you, well, these scary spiders get screamed at and violently stamped on. The halo effect. Furthermore, the halo effect is a factor in dating, where people are on their best behavior to start with, so they come across well. We enjoy this ideal person, and so we describe their other non-ideal traits under the remit of why they are so incredible. It's even a major factor in branding. Companies will do everything to make you think one singular main thing about them. That is their brand, and if they can make that a good thing, we'll use that to explain everything else about them. So if a company like Nike can be endorsed by a celebrity like Michael Jordan, with the Jordan Airs, we're going to think good things about Nike. We assume they're great. Now, the observant amongst you might remember that this episode is about ego-related biases and be like, why is the halo effect here, Sam? Well, it's here because it's related to the desire to be associated with something good, like a successful business or investment like Bernie Madoff, or an attractive partner. We want to be associated with that. So we further invest in the halo effect as part of a self-serving bias. Anyway, we're going to have a cheeky break before we move into the second section of some very self-centered attribution errors.
I am delighted to recommend my sponsor, Cozy Earth, whose bedding and loungewear I genuinely love. It's made from high-quality viscose from bamboo, and it gets softer with every wash. It was voted as Oprah's favorite things several years in a row, and it's because their bed sheets are so damn incredible. Their collection also includes some divine loungewear for your home or travel. They have cute little tote bags to carry your gear anywhere, so whether you are exploring through a journey of personal growth or discovering new parts of the world, you can nestle up under starry skies with the softness of Cozy Earth's loungewear. So pack your bags, venture on and visit cozyearth.com today and use code GROWTH at checkout for an exclusive 35% off. And let Cozy Earth be your travel companion on the road to adventurous growth. cozyearth.com and use code GROWTH at checkout.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The fundamental attribution error is the first we're going to talk about in the attribution errors, and it lays the foundation for all the other ones. It was first proposed way back in 1967 after a psychology experiment by Lee Ross and a few other scientists. They gave participants two pieces of political writing. One was very anti-Fidel Castro, who was a famous dictator back then, and the other piece of writing was arguing for Fidel Castro. In the study, they then asked participants who read the two pieces of writing what they thought about the writers. And of course, people thought the anti-Castro writer was a really good, upstanding person, and they thought the other writer was an idiot. But then in the second half of the study, with new participants, they told the participants that these two writers didn't actually choose the stance that they were arguing about. They, in fact, had a coin toss. They just had to submit an argument either for or against Castro. Wasn't to do with their personal opinions at all. Now, despite the participants in the experiment knowing that the writers had no actual sway behind what they had to write about, they still thought that the anti-Castro writer was just a wonderful person, and that the person who liked Fidel Castro was a bit of an idiot. They just completely ignored the situational factor. That's because we quickly look for causes we can easily understand to explain someone's behavior without looking bigger, without zooming out and thinking bigger at all. We just don't look at their situations. Let's say you see a colleague knock into someone in a rush. You'll think of them as rude or careless. We don't think about the fact they might have an important reason to be in a rush. Let's say someone disagrees with us. We assume that they lack intelligence or that they misunderstand something deliberately just to be annoying, or maybe they have a really massive personal flaw. We don't think about the fact they might just have different perspectives or information to us. Fundamental attribution error. Now, we're going to go deeper into the first extension of the attribution errors, which is the actor-observer bias. As Stephen Covey said, we judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their behavior. And let's say we were to have an unproductive day. We could blame the weather, our health, any number of problems that are going on today in the house or the kids. Yet, if a coworker is unproductive, we'll just think it's because they're lazy. Basically put, if we are the actor of an action, we have a kind explanation for it. I'm late to the cinema because of the rain and my boss called me and I feel bad for arriving late and disrupting people's cinema and making them stand up to let me in. I can explain my bad behavior. If we observe someone else's bad action, we blame their character. They're late to the cinema because they're careless. They don't care. They don't worry about ruining other people's experience, making me stand up to let them in. We easily see the things that affect us, but we blame personality behind other people's problems. If you spill a drink, you could blame it on being bumped, or the design of the glass, or the fact it was left in a stupid place. Someone else spills a drink, it's because they're clumsy. It's a really stupid bias, and we should, of course, endeavour to judge people more kindly and be a bit more rational about ourselves. However, things get even worse. We have the self-serving bias, where we explain any positive outcome in the world due to our incredible character, our wonderful abilities, but if we have a negative outcome, that's due to external factors beyond our control. Our good grades are due to our hard work and intelligence. Our bad grades are due to the bad teacher, the stupid exam questions, and just not having enough time to revise this week. Let's say a project at work goes well, that's because you're amazing. If the project at work fails, it was your team that let you down, the email system wasn't working, you know, other reasons. Let's say you lose some weight this month, that was because of your willpower and determination. You gained weight this month, well, that was because of your genetics, it's not your fault. You'll see this everywhere in the way humans explain things. Good things happen because we're brilliant. Bad things are unpreventable bad luck. A CEO will explain a good year in their company's financials because of their strategy and their leadership. But if the company has a bad year, well, that's poor economic conditions. Let's say a politician wins an election. Well, that's their personal traits, isn't it? Did they lose? Well, that's unfair external factors such as the vote was rigged or maybe mean journalists spreading fake news. Whoa, couldn't think of anybody that ever says that. Crikey, Anyway, although the self-serving bias has some really bad qualities, it's actually essential for our self-esteem. For example, if someone becomes depressed, they actually lose some of their self-serving bias and they fail to attribute good things in life happening due to them. Maybe they are aware that they have friends that like them, but they feel they don't deserve them. Sure, maybe they did win a sports match or something, but it was just luck, they're not even any good. And I thought it was important to just throw this fact in there, is because self-belief is actually really healthy. It's just that if we have too much of it, or if we're completely blind to why it's happening, then we can have self-belief for the wrong reasons and it can cause us to be highly irrational. And overall, as Harper Lee says, people generally see what they look for and they hear what they listen for, and we could all be a little bit less self-centered. Now, lastly, we have perhaps the most dangerous of the attribution errors, which is the hostile attribution bias. It's where individuals will interpret ambiguous actions as hostile. We'll think that we weren't invited to a meeting due to a hostile act of our colleague who's trying to replace us. Perhaps in an argument, we'll think our partner is making a comment to hurt us rather than because they're just trying to explain their own behavior. We'll see this all the time in driving, where a driver will assume a motorist cut them off intentionally, and the hostile attribution bias is the reason we get road rage. We are prone firstly to the actor-observer bias, and we'll add in some extra hostility. And as we're in our car and locked away, there's no way for the other person to explain their behavior until we've wound down our window and shouted at them about the fact they're an a-hole, at which point they have clear evidence that we're up for a fight, and so on and so forth. But looking into this, some really fascinating stuff going on in our minds. Surveys have found that employees who feel unfairly treated are much more likely to have issues with the hostile attribution bias. They'll be likely to perceive a neutral or ambiguous action as hostile, and a lot of their problems come from just the way they interpret the world around them. Children with behavior problems tend to interpret ambiguous social cues as hostile. I'm sure you'll remember some kids when you were at school that were very easy to annoy. Like, I was really good friends with a kid who had some behavior issues, but like, he was fundamentally a nice guy. He was just very easily annoyed and felt like the world was against him. Then one day when we were 11, we were playing rugby and he was coming up behind me. So I just threw the ball before he tackled me, and he was a lot bigger than me. So I accidentally hit him in the eye with the ball, complete accident. Now, he genuinely thought that I had done it deliberately, and so he tried to kill me. And I don't say that lightly. It took all of the five other people playing with us just to keep him from strangling me, whilst one of them ran off to get an adult so they could actually pull him off, and otherwise I would probably be dead. And that was just the hostile attribution bias. Complete accident, but he took it as confirmation that even I, the guy he thought was his friend, also hated him and was totally willing to be mean to him because he didn't have the concept that people were actually nice. Like, up until that moment, I was honestly his best friend. But after that, he could never forgive me. And for me, it wasn't the end of the world. I had other friends. It was totally his problem because he could only perceive threats around him even when they weren't there. So, anyway, people who have trauma in their history or things like borderline disorder have a real amplification of the hostile attribution bias, but we are all very prone to it. It's the reason, for example, behind many conflicts when actions are interpreted as hostile when they just might have been unintentional, misunderstood, or even just an error with someone's engineering. And this is the reason why nuclear weapons are such an existential threat. In 1970, I think it was a Russian submarine, they had a malfunction with their comms and they were cut off, and their satellite system seemed to detect a nuclear launch. They were like, crap, we need to retaliate. And luckily, it was just down to one of their lieutenants that a nuclear war wasn't started by the submarine over absolutely nothing more than some faulty wiring. So the hostile attribution error could genuinely be the reason why humanity destroys itself. Anyway, let's move on to some extra take-homes and lessons now that we've run through these different biases. It's very easy to investigate these different mind traps and yet still fall into them. And the first one is that once we know about them, we'll notice other people falling into them all the time, and we'll assume it's because they are idiots, whilst we don't notice ourselves doing it as well, because we can see our explanation for the behavior we've done wrong. We should really seek to explain everyone else's behaviors from a kinder perspective, without so much blame or expectation that it's down to their character. It's usually situational or accidental. They probably have skills and knowledge we don't know about. And 99.99% of people aren't evil. They're only doing something that's wrong because they're a bit stupid or because you haven't worked out why they know something that you don't. Equally, for ourselves, we shouldn't get too lost in our own desire to explain our wins due to skill and our losses due to bad luck. We really need to take ownership of our weaknesses and understand the factors of luck or the help that we receive from others whenever we do have a win, and be more humble and a little bit less self-centered. Another thing that I've found really useful lately when it comes to being self-centered is things like just the way you talk to others. Like in my family, we have a WhatsApp group chat, and I've just realized how much of that chat I will post about myself because, yeah, I'm the only person that can post pictures about me and what I'm up to. And I do like hearing about what my family is up to, but I've made a real point to make a little more effort when I reply to people to not just be like, oh, congrats on a status update, but also ask them some extra questions to show that I care and I'm interested, because I am, and I actually like hearing more info. It's really worth putting an extra thought cycle to think about someone else's experience and ask an extra question, because it shows that you care. And it's a great way to just do some extra training of getting out of your own head as a default. And it's the same with talking with any of your friends or communicating for business reasons over email. We're just so prone to talk about ourselves. For another example, my friend's been writing a really good series about how to be a good podcast interviewer, and he was asking for some extra inputs. I, of course, had lots of feedback, but I just bothered to put an extra sentence telling him how good what he's been writing is, and asking him how many installments he thought he had left of different ideas on the topic at the point that he is now. And it just gave him license to talk about himself a bit more, and he listed like his three different ideas that he was still working on. And that just meant he felt a bit more listened to, and it was nice for me to actually hear how he's thinking. Like, it wasn't my first thought to ask him that, but it was just like, oh, I'm putting all my own information. I should just balance out my default behavior to talk about my experiences with asking someone about their experiences first. And I've personally found that a really good way to help balance that natural instinct that we have. Because when we recognize that everybody has the spotlight effect on themselves, it's actually really kind to be the person that bothers to pay that little bit more attention to others around us rather than constantly talking about ourselves and our opinions, like commenting on other people's Instagram posts rather than posting about yourself. Another life hack is if you ever think about someone for any reason, just send them a message saying that you thought about them. You hear a song on the radio that your friend always loves, message them and say, "Ha, oh, heard this song, always makes me think of you." That's it, nothing else. It's such a good life hack and it will change your life. Right, anyway, so as we've covered, be kinder when we explain other people's behaviors, be less self-centered in explaining our own behaviors, and put some time and effort into paying attention to others. And now, lastly, we also need to remember that there are good reasons behind all these cognitive biases that I have spoken about. When we hear about these lists of negative mind traps that we fall into, it sounds like they are dumb, and that can really add to our explanation that other people are dumb. But actually, the ego and these negative behaviors or fallacies, they do have a positive reason behind their existence. Just like the lack of a self-serving bias can cause depression. The ego is actually a fundamental part of what keeps us alive and operating as a human. It helps us prioritize our decisions and helps us be a useful member of society. It, of course, has lots of negative aspects. We just have to remember our own goal is to recognize the bad things and try and balance ourselves. But if we look at other people who fail due to any of these errors, we could easily think of them as egotistical, self-centered, maybe narcissistic. But actually, explaining other people's behaviors that way is being very self-centered ourselves. We, of course, can see our own reasons for our actions, but for others, we describe them as self-serving, unempathetic, maybe blind to other people's needs and situations. So instead, we should just worry a little bit less about what everyone does and be kinder to them and help them with some positive feedback where we make it clear that we are being positive, because as we've seen, ambiguous can come across as perhaps hostile, so make sure it's clearly not ambiguous and that we're being nice to them. And then for ourselves, work on your own superpower of just not being easily offended. Give less of a damn what people say or think about you, because they probably don't think something terrible. That's just us adding our extra explanation to it that doesn't help us or them. And when you can master not being easily offended by others, you will really do just great in life. Now, if you have a friend who often loses their composure if they get behind the steering wheel, or you genuinely consider a bit of a reckless idiot, well, send them this episode as a reminder to be less self-centered and to live a life with less problems and worries that they don't need. If you did have any good insights whilst you're listening, do please feel free to leave a comment on what you loved or hated or what you might want to know more about. Of course, positive ratings of the podcast are always appreciated for my own self-serving spotlight effect and ego-driven behaviors, because I of course think that everything is all about me. So be kind and give me some attention to help nourish my essential ego and prevent me from falling into depression. And lastly, remember that everyone you meet is fighting a battle that you know nothing about. So be kind to other people always. And in fact, doing that is a kindness to yourself as well.
Hi, I'm Jessica Porter, and I'm a hypnotherapist, as well as a total relaxation nerd. If you're struggling to sleep at night, I'm here to help. Sleep Magic is my new podcast of relaxing hypnosis, created to help you doze off tonight. With my episodes every Wednesday, I'm going to make suggestions that help you relax really, really deeply. And hypnosis is not what you've seen on TV. There's no swinging pocket watch or clucking like a chicken, I promise. I'm just here to help you make friends with sleep again so you can get the rest you deserve. So search Sleep Magic on your favorite podcast app, and I'll see you there.